Nos vamos ahora a noticias de Europa. En España se viene endureciendo la persecución de migrantes que para ganarse la vida venden copias de películas y discos de música en las calles. El gobierno impuso multas que les obligan a pagar una indemnización a la Sociedad General de Autores y Editores y también penas de cárcel para los migrantes. Este es el caso de Alaji Mbenge, que lleva 3 meses en la cárcel de Basauri tras haber sido condenado a 6 meses de prisión, pagar una multa de $1,300 y más de $960 de compensación a la Sociedad General de Autores. Pachi de la Fuente, integrante de la organización de Embolo Molledo Le, o la Plataforma por los Derechos de las Personas Migrantes, fue entrevistado por la radio Tastas y Ratia en Bilbao. Él explica que Alaji fue detenido a pesar de que en esos momentos no estaba vendiendo en la calle.
La policía municipal les cogió en Torrelavega, que habían ido allí a las fiestas, y ni siquiera en ese momento estaban vendiendo, sino que llevaban pues unos 100 CDs en la mochila, ¿no? Habían detenido a él y a un compañero, y este chico, bueno, pues llega un día a la reunión diciendo que a su compañero lo han metido en la cárcel, ¿no? Y él preocupado también diciendo, bueno, pues ahora vendrán a por mí, ¿no? Era ya una sentencia firme, la condena era firme, y entonces, además de todo esto, digamos, pues el juez había pedido la sustitución de la pena por la expulsión. Entonces nos sorprende decir, bueno, después de todo esto, ahora por qué pide además el ingreso en prisión de esta persona, ¿no? Nos ponemos en contacto con la abogada, que hay que buscarla, pues una abogada de Torrelavega, que la había atendido de oficio, y bueno, pues sí, ya lo miran y dice que el juez pues lo ha pedido el ingreso en prisión porque hay riesgo de fuga. Se ve que el juez no había mirado que estas personas, que es curioso, digamos, que aunque la sentencia era ya firme, pues ellos seguían yendo a firmar cada 15 días como se les había mandado en la instrucción. Luego digamos que riesgo de fuga, pues, y encima la Ertzaintza va a detenerlo a su domicilio y allí lo encuentra, o sea que, bueno, pues se hace un recurso contra esta decisión del juez. Bueno, llevamos ya más de 2 meses y el juez no se ha dignado ni a contestar al recurso, ¿no? La realidad es que ya han pasado 3 meses, digamos, estaba condenado a 6 meses, aunque luego fue sustituido por la expulsión, y hoy, digamos, que tiene esta aberración jurídica de que una parte sigue teniendo la pena de expulsión sobre él y a la vez ya ha cumplido la mitad de lo que habría sido la pena que le había puesto en un inicio el juez, ¿no? Todo, digamos, por haber llevado unos CDs en una mochila.
Actualmente en el Estado español hay 118 personas presas por delitos contra la propiedad intelectual y son más de 500 las que han cumplido condenas por ese motivo desde el año 2003.
A todos los sin papeles que malviven en Europa, ahí te va.
Solo voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correré mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdido en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen el clandestino por no llevar papel.
Los fenómenos climatológicos extremos que se sufren en los últimos años en el mundo, tales como la sequía o las intensas lluvias, golpean con mayor dureza a los países en desarrollo, pese a que son las naciones ricas e industrializadas las que emiten la mayoría de gases que provocan el cambio climático. Recientemente, un grupo de activistas de diferentes países llevó sus preocupaciones ante las Naciones Unidas para explicar que son las mujeres, en muchos de los casos, las primeras en ser afectadas por el cambio climático. Jorge Millares reporta.
Las mujeres que viven en zonas rurales de los países en desarrollo son muy dependientes de los recursos locales para subsistir. Habitualmente son las encargadas de acarrear el agua, buscar la comida para alimentar a la familia y el combustible para cocinar o mantener caliente el hogar. Para ellas, los efectos del cambio climático, ya sea la sequía, precipitaciones irregulares o la deforestación, complican cada día más estas tareas. En coincidencia con la reciente cumbre de la ONU sobre el clima a mujeres procedentes de estas naciones, visitaron el organismo mundial para relatar cómo sus vidas se ven afectadas por el cambio climático. Eufemia Tsor es coordinadora de programas de mujeres de paz en Ghana.
En la región del Volta en Ghana, mi comunidad y las vecinas han estado en guerra durante los últimos 80 años por cuestiones de tierra. La población está creciendo, lo que está aumentando la escasez de recursos, de tierra para cultivo y hasta por agua.
Vandana Rana, de la organización Sati de Nepal, considera que el movimiento femenino de su país aún no entiende la vinculación ineludible que el fenómeno climático tiene con la vida de las mujeres.
Francamente, hemos estado muy vinculadas al movimiento femenino y todo este tiempo he visto que no tiene un entendimiento claro sobre el tema, de cómo el cambio climático provoca la migración o hasta los mismos conflictos.
Para la keniana y premio Nobel de la Paz, Wangari Maathai, uno de los obstáculos para la participación de la mujer en las acciones para mitigar los efectos del cambio climático es la falta de escolaridad. Los pobres, afirma, constituyen la mayoría y los que tienen menos control sobre las cosas que les afectan.
Poor people at the moment are worried about...
And coming up next on Free Radio, late but still great, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the October 8th edition, 2009. Stay tuned with special guest John Malkin, author and former victim of the Citizens Police Review Board and creator of that board as well.
I ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweater, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no bed, ain't got no mind. Ain't got no mother, ain't got no culture, ain't got no friends, ain't got no schooling, ain't got no love, ain't got no name. Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sick. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life, I got my freedom, I've got life, I've got life, and I'm gonna keep it, I've got life, and nobody's gonna take it away, I've got life.
And that was a derivative version of I Got Life from the musical Hair. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of this show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Sorry for being a bit late, running around doing all these different chores. And also meeting with my guests very briefly right before the show. He helped me carry a box of files over. I'm actually in the studio with Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, author, communitarian, nonviolent activist, and former Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Commission and Citizens Police Review Board member, John Malkin. Hello, John.
Hey, Robert. Thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Oh, sure. Thanks for coming on. I think, you know, you've been on before, is that right?
On your show?
Yeah.
I think two or three times.
Really?
One of those, yeah.
Shows you where I'm at.
It's been a while, probably 5 years.
We probably talked about the similar subject of the origins of the Santa Cruz Police Review Board in the 90s, which of course was in power, and power isn't quite the right word, which was in existence from 1995 to 2003, the very first month of 2003. And you were actually involved, you wrote your thesis as a student on the issue of police violence, police accountability.
Well, I was a community studies student, and the title of my thesis was The Movement to Establish a Police Review Commission in Santa Cruz. So I completed that thesis in May of 1992, and I'd been working for a year with the local group to help create a police review board, the Citizens for Police Review Board. So I did my community studies as being an activist, trying to help increase police accountability by creating a police review board. 1992 is when I finished my studies and graduated, but I continued working on that until the board was created in 95. I was appointed to serve on the board by Celia Scott. And actually, you were probably there that day when I was appointed. Scott Kennedy and a couple other city council people argued against my appointment to the board because I had been an activist who had helped to shape the board, and they thought my viewpoint would be biased, and they were apparently saying that they were looking for people who would be unbiased as appointees to the board.
You know, it's interesting. I've talked about police review boards and also the CPRB, the Citizens Police Review Board of Santa Cruz, endlessly on my show for the last 15 years. And I think we have to understand how the police review board came about in terms of there was a lot of activism in the early 90s around police abuses against particularly poor and homeless people. And very specifically, there was a big scandal where Sergeant, then Officer Lauren Butchie Baker was accused by 9 different women of sexual misconduct, by which we don't necessarily mean rape, but fondling, inappropriate searches, things of that sort. And there was actually quite a movement that developed, and you actually, I think, I don't know if you summarized it or Margaret Marr, who was an attorney involved in this issue quite strongly. She and Sherry Connable kind of, and Simba Kenyatta sort of led the coalition for a Citizens Police Review Commission, excluding those who are a little too militant, like myself, to my chagrin. And frankly, I felt that the whole situation was weakened by that. But you did, as a commission trying to develop a police review board, ask for a number of, aspects to the board that did not happen, like independence of the city manager, independent investigations, mandated public hearings. Tell us a little bit about that. I know it was stalled for 3 years by Byers and Kennedy in subcommittee.
Well, to some extent, Catherine Byers and Don Lane, they already had this public safety subcommittee. They were arguing that that was already meeting the needs that we were talking about generating in a police review board. They were saying, we're already doing what you're asking for. And that wasn't the case. When you had a complaint about an encounter with a police officer, the place you took your complaint was the police department. And actually, when I first started as an intern with the group trying to create the police review board, I went around. And in fact, yeah, you couldn't get a complaint form except at the police department. And I personally changed that. And then you could get it at other places like the library, and also a Spanish version was available. And you know what? Now in 2009, I spoke with Tony Madrigal fairly recently.
City council member.
And the only place you can get a complaint form now is at the police department.
The more things change, the more they revert to the same thing. And actually, you actually have the Sentinel headline for 1992 story about our very good sergeant now, then Officer Baker.
Yeah, you mentioned this realm of Sergeant Baker, Officer Baker, who was accused of sexual misconduct in arresting or detaining women in Santa Cruz. And this became a big case that, from our point of view, was helping to prove that there was a need for independent police review. The police, a lot of people at the police department were saying that we were using the women politically to create a police review board. These women came together separately. I think two or three of them were in one incident, but most of them were in separate incidents, talking about how Baker had touched them in a sexual
Sergeant
manner.
Baker was still on the force.
Oh, yeah.
Sergeant Baker has been successfully sued for thousands of dollars and has cost the department a lot of money already. I know at least two cases, one of them involving me, where I actually recovered some money from the police department for false arrest.
And again, I have old articles from July 1992 talking about women coming forward and saying that they had been treated in a sexual way. They were asked to expose themselves during searches. And, I mean, the police department has regulations about searching people of the other gender, and actually you can't do it generally. There's ways of touching also with the back of the hand rather than the forehand in searching someone of an opposite gender.
No feeling women up, in other words.
Yeah. But apparently, I mean, these women were saying that they had been touched in a sexual way by Baker.
But they were lying. Wasn't that with the DA's investigation? And the
yeah, there was this investigation
grand jury
by the DA.
Weren't there three separate investigations?
Yeah.
The grand jury, an internal affairs investigation by the police department itself, which
yeah.
naturally was, of course, of the most rigorous and formal sort.
Yeah.
Although, actually, wasn't the investigation about clearing Baker of criminal conduct
right.
rather than, let's say, inappropriate violation of departmental rules?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something that the police review board, when we were talking about creating the police review board, we wanted something that would be able to look at complaints and then generate new procedures that would meet the needs of community members. If there are officers who are searching people in a particular way, generate procedures and training that would change that. There are things that happen at the police department and police departments all over the place that become the general way of doing things, and they might actually be illegal or not what the community would consent to.
You know, at the time you had Police Chief Bassett, who was succeeded by Police Chief Steve Belcher, who was in turn succeeded by our current Police Chief Howard Scarry, and I kind of follow the same sad trail that you do when you notice, when you follow this is the example of the police complaint form, which I think in a way is largely academic anyway, since complaints almost invariably are first they're discouraged, and then when they're if that isn't sufficient, if they're not reduced to inquiries or shoved aside, they're investigated. For example, I made a complaint. They're investigated by people who are hostile. The guy who was investigating my complaint was someone you may know the name of. I believe he's now Captain Clark, Steve Clark. And he refused to allow me to make a tape recording of my statement as I gave it to him.
Yeah.
He insisted that that would be a violation of the police procedure, which is, of course, a bunch of horseshit. And I was probably prepared. I was prepared to go do it anyway, if you know. But I didn't want to waste my time going down there if I was going to encounter a lot of hassle. And actually, Clark has reverted. I know back in the mid-90s, even before the police review board was set up, when I went in to make a complaint, I had a tape recorder with me, and when they allowed me to make the complaint, they allowed me to tape record it. Although, when Linda Edwards and I went into a police station trying to make a complaint about the famous Sergeant Saint-Ange, we were bodily thrown out of the police station and then locked out. It was, and as for the Public Safety Committee that you mentioned, their hearings were closed until Nick Whitehead and I essentially walked into one of their meetings and said we weren't leaving. At which point, suddenly, they opened up their hearings.
An experience that I had that I'm reminded of when you're talking about this, and I think I have mentioned this when we've spoken on the radio before. Once the board was established, the first meetings that we had where we opened up files and looked at complaints that people had about Santa Cruz police officers, there was a Santa Cruz police officer in the room with us. And I thought that the work that we would be doing, that we would encounter some difficulties and a lot of intensity and discussion of deciding what to do about complaints. I had not foreseen that we would have to spend a lot of time talking about our process itself and making it work in the way that it had been described it would happen. And the way it had been described it would happen was much less than I had hoped for. But I thought it would at least happen that way. So it would happen in a place other than the police department was one idea. Mm-hmm. That it would happen away from police officers. Our first meetings happened at the police department with a police officer in the room. And even more than that, the police officer in the room was someone who was during our review of a complaint, they were advocating for the police officer. And specifically, when they gave us a file about the complaint that was written by a citizen of the community, included in that file were papers indicating commendations and commendations that officer had gotten for doing positive things in the past. In other words, they were presenting sort of a case
irrelevant to the actual complaint in question.
Irrelevant, except for the fact that it defended that officer.
In general terms.
In general terms, yeah. So I really advocated that we change that process of how we were doing things. And there was plenty of arguing about that. Some people thought it was valuable to have that input, to know really more about that officer. Well, it was kind of like a court situation where someone's advocating for the officer, someone's advocating for the other person. That's not how the board was set up. We were supposed to look at a complaint, look at it at face value, hopefully actually have access to records indicating past complaints filed against that officer. That was problematic, too, and we didn't have that.
I don't think that ever happened, did it?
No.
No.
There's a lot of protection for police officers.
And even more as of the 2006 court decision down in Southern California, mm-hmm. which essentially bans any kind of publishing of any of these disciplinary consequences of police officers.
Mm.
You can't know what the results of your complaint are now, although the board itself died three years before that decision was made.
We tried to make it so that people could request that their information would be public, would be made public. Mm-hmm. And there were still problems with that. There were times, for example, when local press reported on complaints against police officers and the reporting was not accurate. They often got their information from the police department press releases, which are based on police reports, which are based on the perspective of the police officer. His perspective or her perspective is likely going to be pretty different than the person on the other end of what happened. There was one incident where a woman had complained about how an officer had touched her during a search. She was arrested for being a prostitute. The San Jose Mercury News reported that her complaint was that the officer had touched her breasts in a sexual way. And that was the extent of the reporting about it. Actually, having read the complaint directly, I knew that her complaint also indicated that she said the officer reached into her pants during the search. And I thought
searching for contraband, surely.
That's what he indicated. Mm-hmm.
It's not appropriate to do that if you're of a different gender and there's another officer who's a female, or there's not like a physical safety concern, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I argued among the other members of the Police Review Board that we're responsible actually to correct that perception in the public now, and no one else thought so.
You were on a board that was chaired by Kay Bowden, who we talked about this like yesterday or the day before, or maybe Sunday when we... and you agreed to be on the show. You had your differences of opinion, and the police department didn't like you at all for the kind of position you were taking. They regarded you in the same way that Kennedy and Byers were claiming as some kind of a red in the middle of the, a turd in the punch bowl, a bigoted individual whose agenda was, you know, different than that of being fair towards police and litigants or, let's say, complainants alike. And you, as I remember from those days, there was, of course, the famous, and I've often repeated the story, confrontation you had with, I guess, then Sergeant Clark, who was head of the Police Officers Association for a period of time and has risen high in the department and is a perjurer, by the way. I don't mind saying that aloud because I know that from my own case. Mm-hmm. I heard him lie about my case under oath in a deposition, and he plays fast and loose with the truth, at least on some occasions. So he also is famous for saying to homeless people when he took their blankets, was asked, why don't you just take a photograph of them if you want to do this, convict them of violating the blanket ban, which still is a law in Santa Cruz. You cannot have a blanket after 11 o'clock at night in a position available for bedding. That's criminal behavior. Why don't you just take a photo of it? He said, why? Because I can, was his response. Mm. And I think that really is the police department's response, and that's the reason for wanting meaningful police review, and probably the reason that you wanted to, maybe the reason that you wanted to, you know, spent so many years struggling for this issue. You finally got appointed to the board by the one city council member who's actually pretty uniformly opposed all the civil liberties desecrations that have happened in Santa Cruz against the homeless and against poor people downtown, which all the other council now unanimously support. Mm. But you found yourself alone. You found yourself isolated on the board.
Yeah, I did. And a number of people in the police department were not supportive of the board being created.
No,
and I say that because a couple of them, I think, were supportive, actually. Individual officers, because of the way officers treat each other and because of the way that the police department gets represented to the public, when an officer does something that's awful to people, other officers don't like being a part of an organization that's represented in that way. So a couple of people, I think, were, they wanted some changes to happen. The higher ups in the department publicly were really clear, the police chief, deputy chief, the Police Officers Association people, Steve Clark and
Barbara somebody.
Yeah, she was tough to deal with. They were really angry. And I just dug up a couple of things. I had my own encounters with Steve Clark that were really difficult. But even prior to that, in 1995 and in 1994 and 93, there were a lot of presentations made to the city council urging them to create a police review board. And during one of those, Steve Clark told the city council that the Police Officers Association had done investigation and research that had proved, that had revealed that there were hidden motives behind members of the Coalition for a Police Review Board. Here's a letter dated April 4th, 1995, written to Steve Clark by members of the Citizens Police Review Board, myself, Jane Looney, Simba Kenyatta, and Ben Rice. And Steve Clark had said that they had done research that said that some members of the CPRB were involved because they had laws enforced against them in the past, and that there were lawyers in the coalition whose motivation was to circumvent the judicial process and have free access to discovery. This is particularly interesting because...
What this means, by the way, discovery is the process in court whereby lawyers can uncover the prosecution's case and get all the documents that are useful in determining in the defense of a particular client.
Yeah. This would be really hard to prove that was the motivation behind us. We were a group of citizens, some lawyers, lots of activists coming together trying to create an accountability system for the local police department. It was interesting because in 2000, when was that? In must have been just in, seems like I quit the board in 97, so maybe in 96, I had met with Steve Clark, and he had made some comments about me in public, pinpointing me as the radical on the board, saying, I hope that the wild ideas of John Malkin don't spread to the rest of the board, and name-calling in some ways to me. I met with him to ask him to discontinue doing that. During that meeting, he told me he had been investigating me and my political activities as a member of the city's police review board. And he told me that he knew things about me as a result of that investigation that if he made public would be embarrassing to me.
And now you're prepared to go public with all that scandalous material, eh, John?
I went public 6 months after that. And actually, I the only reason I waited 6 months was because the only other person present at that meeting was Kay Bowden, who was the, as you mentioned, the chair of the police review board at that time. And her point of view was that if I went public, I would damage the relationship between the board and the police department, and that I would become known as the person that did that ruining.
And you bought this bullshit, eh, John?
Yeah, and as I've told you before, there's Kay now.
All right, Kay calling in. Actually, it's about as likely as Steve Clark calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with John and Robert. Who's calling?
You guys are summoning ass-kicking Steve Clark, right?
We are talking about Captain Steve Clark.
Oh, is he captain now?
He is captain, yes. Don't forget that, please.
I'm sorry, I had to call in. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right.
What's going on? But this is the first time I've ever heard John Malkin on the Bathrobe Spears Broadside show.
Well, that's what I thought, too, but he insists he's been on my show a number of times. I think he's probably lying. I'm going to contact Captain Clark to get a little more of the straight dope on this.
I actually view myself as a kind of a co-host on this show.
He is a co-host. He's a hosty-toasty kind of guy.
Maybe Clark can waterboard him a little bit and get the truth out of him.
Well, better waterboarded than CPR bead, because, well, perhaps not.
I just had a comment on Steve Clark, because I've had my own little run-ins with that great officer. I think he's a captain now? He's still in the Santa Cruz Police Force?
I believe so. Yep. At least a year ago he was.
Wow.
I mean, he was the head of internal affairs, or now called professional standards, the group that, instead of a police review board, as you know, caller, investigates complaints supposedly independently in a little independent section of the police department, although how that can ever be independent has always been a little beyond me. So.
Well, I had a couple run-ins with Clark. I don't know if you throw it in there as well, but he threatened to kick my ass a couple of different times. I think the one time was there was a, what was it, the 209 proposition a few years ago. I guess many years ago. It was the affirmative action thing. I think a bunch of students were protesting and doing a big march downtown. And I noticed the NET team, which is the neighborhood enforcement team that Steve Clark headed up, basically, I think, in the beach flats where they would bust people for cocaine and this and that, and then they decided to infiltrate some of the political groups. I noticed him in a crowd of UCSC students protesting downtown with, what did he have on, a tie-dye shirt with candles, and he was singing, you know, peace and this and that, and I was like, what? I was blown away.
Now, remember, yeah, you've actually told this story before.
I just thought I'd mention that he was, you know.
Well, the thing that I mean, you know, it's not so much a... you know, a roast Clark session, though he is, you know, he's a significantly high official in the police department. I don't think he's been held accountable for his behavior over the years. And I think it's dangerous that such a person is allowed a position of authority and responsibility and power that he has. But, you know, the real issue, one of the reasons I called you on here, I'm beginning to remember, John, is we're going to talk about selective enforcement, because that was the last big push of the Citizens Police Review Board, and I believe probably the reason, or one of the main reasons, it was terminated by the City Council. The last meeting, I actually was reviewing the last meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board in December of 2002, chaired by Mark Halfmoon, who I, by the way, tried to get on the show, but Mark is very busy, hard to reach, and also a little reluctant to come on the air to deal with this. I've always called him Mark half-assed or Mark half-hearted because I wanted him to, even though he lost the title of chair, he was talking about chair of the CPRB in exile, and that, you know, I think he gave one speech and then disappeared into the distance. I think the people who were on that board could have had a lot of, given the community a lot of significant information if they'd gotten together and, you know, made stuff public, but they chose, you know, because they didn't have their little official chairs and their little official titles, they didn't want to do it. It's amazing to me how people can spend 20 hours a week engaging in useless procedural bullshit involves essentially colluding with the police and covering up a lot of crap, because that's what the CPRB was, if not doing directly, really facilitating happening.
Right.
But then when they get off the board and they actually can say something about what's meaningfully happened, they don't want to spend 5 hours a week or 2 hours a week doing it. You know,
well, they have no power. There's no power in the board at all.
Well, there was no power in the board before. But once they're off the board and they can actually say something real about it, they choose not to. John's an exception here. He's in the studio. He's giving his experience. He was an activist before he started and an activist. I'm not saying Mark isn't an activist.
He brought up the whole thing about the whole resistance from, you know, Sergeant Clark, or excuse me, Captain Clark now on Santa Cruz Police. And it just shows, you know, the hypocrisy of it all.
Well, it shows that there's no real accountability. Of course, you know, I don't know that we're making complaints about behaviors that are years old. So,
well, can people still make complaints? Can they go down?
You can make a complaint.
Last place I checked was maybe the library. There was a complaint form you can pick up, you know, without having to go into the
police station. It's supposed
to
be available at the
library,
but John, I don't know, is it available at the library?
Last I heard, it's not, but... That when I, like I mentioned earlier, in 1992, I went around and made sure it was available at 10 different places: the library, Loudoun Nelson Center, the DA's office, Resource Center for Nonviolence. But Tony Madrigal, when I spoke to him recently, he said one of the main things I want to do is make sure complaint forms are available somewhere besides the police department.
Right.
And I said, I did that in 1992. You're kidding me. That's been reverted now, and apparently that's what he told me.
How about online? Can you do it online? Of course, they'd get your UP address.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, he couldn't do it anonymously.
Well, I know you can file Public Records Act requests to the police department online, though then you have to go through the redoubtable Tricia Hewsom in the police department, who, for me, has been successfully blocking requests and refusing to serve me. Well, she doesn't. The staff there don't like it when I show up with a tape recorder. Because
easier to do it online, just like send you the documents, you know.
They want you to pay money before you get the documents, even though the documents, you know, don't really require much staff time developing.
Right.
They are...
Especially if it's online.
Yeah, I mean, it is true that the general orders of the police department, at least some of them several years ago, are now online. That's an important thing, because the general orders, for listeners who don't know, is... Police are supposed to follow the law, but often you can't get them to follow the law, and you can't get them the DA to prosecute them, and you can't get their internal affairs department to hold them accountable. But if they violate their own procedures, then they start getting in trouble, and that's what you want to find out, which perhaps the Police Review Board didn't really get into so much, either under you, John, or...
The general orders?
Is to look at the general orders.
I did, hugely.
Did you?
And that's where I got attacked more and more.
Because you were really getting at the nub of it. Cops are sensitive when you point out they're violating general orders.
Yes.
Yeah, and then the union takes over, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, let me mention one other thing about Clark that the two of you might not remember also. I mean, even Don Lane, who was not famous for, really confronting the police very much, in 1992 he wrote a letter to Steve Clark, and September 24th, 1992, Don Lane was mayor of the city of Santa Cruz at the time. The meeting before this letter was written, the city council meeting, Steve Clark had come there. I was at that meeting. Steve Clark, during his presentation, said, if there's a police review board created in Santa Cruz, I will hold each and every one of you personally responsible for that. Here's what Don Lane wrote to Mr. Steve Clark later. Dear Mr. Clark, I was extremely troubled by your remarks on behalf of the Peace Officers Association at the September 22nd City Council meeting. In addition to my perception that you presented an attitude of self-righteousness and arrogance, I found the substance of your remarks offensive and counterproductive. Many people, including myself, will find it difficult to forgive or forget your stance of obstruction, name-calling, and insensitivity to the public's desire for police accountability and scrutiny. You have created a lot of work for your colleagues in the local Peace Officers Association in rebuilding the trust of the community and at least some members of the City Council. Perhaps you too could recognize your mistakes and act to correct them. Until you do, I believe you will be an ineffective representative of the Peace Officers Association before the council and the community. And I want to add, after I filed my complaint and publicly talked about what happened during my meeting with Steve Clark, where he threatened...
4 years later.
Yeah, 4 years later. Mm-hmm. He threatened to make something public about me that would embarrass me unless I changed what I was doing on the police review board. What was I going to say? That shortly after I went public with all of that, members of the Police Officers Association locally, they had their annual vote about who would be president, and Steve Clark was voted not to be president anymore. And I heard, that's why I kind of mentioned earlier, one reason why I mentioned earlier, I knew that some police officers wanted some changes to happen in the police department.
Did you get some indication that that was because of what had happened with him and
yes.
you? Because I know that when Sergeant Baker...
I did. That was indicated.
You may remember that when Officer Baker was revealed, you know, was accused by 9 women,
yeah.
he was not only...
He was promoted to detective.
He was promoted to detective and then declared Officer of the Year.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
You know,
that's
I'm,
right.
You know,
yeah. Well, some things happen publicly. Different things happen privately.
Well,
privately.
I noticed just doing Cop Watch back many years ago that... I was singled out by both those officers you mentioned, Baker and Clark, on a number of occasions. I've managed to stay out of being arrested, except for one time there was in the San Lorenzo Park that there was a neighborhood enforcement team sting operation I got arrested and caught up in the middle of. But other than that, it was I'd always get contacted by Clark. And he'd always threaten me with some kind of physical violence every time. And I wasn't doing it. I'd just be in the neighborhood recording for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I had the same experience with, I guess it was, Lieutenant Clark in 2005 when he arrested me at City Council. I was standing at the microphone trying to get my 2 minutes to speak on an item. Rotkin, our mayor at the time, and a mayor again in a month, had changed the rules, making it illegal to speak on an item if you've used 2 minutes on other items.
Mm.
And so now you can only speak on for 2 minutes on all consent agenda items. Actually, it was a total of 5 minutes on all consent agenda items, but 2 minutes per item or something.
Right.
But in any case, Clark, without telling me I was under arrest, physically grabbed me and twisted me around.
Huh.
And he shoved me outside. And I kept asking, am I under arrest? Am I under arrest? Finally, Rotkin said, you're under arrest. And I said, fine. And I went with him. I wasn't going to leave until I was told I was under arrest. When I got outside, Clark, and I talked about this on the air, got very close to me and said in a sort of a dramatic, angry whisper, if you ever resist me again, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. He said the same thing to me. You're going to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's... Yeah, it's inappropriate behavior, obviously, for a police officer. And it also, I've always had the impression, you know, and this is not, I'm not trying to, I'm critical of Clark, there's no question about it. But Clark has been in the past a bully, and I kind of had hoped he'd changed his stripes. But this was the guy who kicked homeless people awake as they sat on the streets by their accounts in 1988. This is the man who came up to a guy with a skateboard at the old bookshop Santa Cruz, and when the guy, you know, gave him some lips, pulled out his gun and said, down on your knees and say your prayers,
yeah.
according to witnesses. I didn't see it. That was the account.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting a little lost in Captain Clark. The issue really is, how can the community respond to police abuse? One of your responses was Cop Watch, and I know, John, one of your responses was...
Well, it's not just Cop Watch. It's just being able to stand there and be able to watch and stop, and usually they try to move along people right away. It's like, just stay there and watch.
Right, asserting your rights.
I can watch. I can be here.
Right.
And let them assert your rights toward the police officer. You don't have to be in, Cop Watch.
It's hard for
people to... just a person.
It's hard for people to feel they can do that, particularly working people who are afraid of being arrested, afraid of losing their property.
Yeah, everybody should be able to do that and should do that, and because that's your tax dollars at work.
Knowing your rights and actually being a part of an organization like Cop Watch is one way to go. John, what you tried to do is you tried to... establish a Citizens Police Review Board by getting the community together to do that. You got essentially the same Don Lane who wrote such a, supposedly critical letter of, I guess it was Sergeant or even Officer Clark at that time, said nothing while Kennedy and Byers delayed and defanged the police board. And then, of course, people were appointed who were not interested in a meaningful review of the police department. You were probably one of the few people who was interested in that kind of activity. And then when people began to get interested again 6 or 7 years later, Mark Half Moon, I think Faust, another activist, was on the board. Maybe even Arnie Left to some extent, though I felt he got pretty bad after a while. They immediately cut the board out of the budget at a strange time. They did it in January before no other commissions were cut. That commission was cut, and it was interesting. The last meeting talks about what they were going to do in future meetings, and these included asking the city council to direct the city manager, to direct the police chief to change the display of force rules on detention and on arrest, pass Sherry Connable's selective enforcement resolution, consider releasing the citations to determine if there was selective enforcement downtown, re-examine the computer system that the police department claimed was preventing any kind of meaningful tabulation of results. These were all things that were going to be considered at the next January meeting. There was no next January meeting in 2003. It just went down. Now, you might say, what, conspiracy theorists, just a coincidence. It's interesting to me that that happened at that time. Anything else, Skidmark, you want to say?
No,
I'm going to reveal who you are to the entire
people
audience.
Can call in if they want. But, yeah, I just wanted to point that out there. Especially, just for folks that are out there on the streets and get contacted by police, please don't say anything to them. The more you say to them, the more you.
Yeah, the best thing to say is, am I free to go?
Yeah.
Or if you're a homeless
best
person,
thing to say
am
is,
I free to go back to
I don't
to want
to say
doing.
Anything. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to a lawyer. That's it.
Right, and then you say, I don't consent to a search. I want to talk to a lawyer.
Yeah,
if you want,
and that's
what are the charges?
It. Don't say anything else. It's
right.
Like, and they try to engage you into...
Right.
Saying more things, just don't say anything.
Right, and there
else.
Actually are forums that you've probably seen, Bob, that Rico Thunder, Wes Modes was doing called Know Your Rights, where they actually role play this. You really have to.
You could watch cops and see these idiots just babble on about what they're doing.
But you see, not to do that.
The situation is, it's like, shut your mouth. Go to jail.
It's easier.
You'll get out.
It's easier. It's easy for you and I to say that. The problem is, to do it really requires rehearsing it again and again in the face of intimidation, in the face of coaxing, in the face of humiliation. It's like people who did sit-ins in the South had to rehearse getting beaten up by white racists. I mean, police officers train all the time to do what they're doing. We have to train to, return things to normal. Thanks for the call, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Hey,
all
Bob.
Right,
thanks.
In the studio with me, John Malkin. Go ahead, John.
One of my things that I was focusing on was exactly what you're talking about. I really saw that the dominant training that police officers have is how to threaten the use of force and use force. And they're not trained in a lot of other communication skills. That's really limiting to their possibilities. Because of those strategies they use, people in all communities are afraid of them. There are very few people who are, oh, great, the police are here,
Wait a minute. The Santa Cruz neighbors love the police. In fact, last weekend they had some barbecues all over town, which Don Lane attended. I saw his picture in the paper. Yeah, there is, It's, remember what Machiavelli supposedly said? It is better to be loved than feared, but it's better to be feared than not obeyed, I guess, is the answer. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would hope that... my hope was that we could inject into the police department nonviolent trainings and verbal communication skills and maybe even a change of attitude of rather than arriving with the goal of trying to control a situation, but try and help get through whatever conflict is happening there. When I left the police review board, what I thought often was it'd be great to create a group that could do that in our community besides the police. Someone you could call if there was a conflict happening in your neighborhood, in your home. people that were trained, had some medical skills, and maybe would use force, but would be trained more in using verbal communication to reduce the violence that was happening at that moment or deal with whatever kind of conflict was occurring. And I hear now and again people who are trying to do that in Santa Cruz or elsewhere. It's tough. People are used to calling the police, and some situations are pretty intense.
There's been some discussion about alternate modes of... dealing with violence and problems in the community than a sort of an elite force with an elite group that's empowered to use force and violence to deal with that issue. I mean, I talked to the author of Our Enemies in Blue, an interesting book which you may have seen, who talked about different places where they'd have used different approaches. And I think the trouble is a lot of this also tends to revert to if you consider the laws that people are facing and that the fact that these laws we're under are not really done in the interest of the community often, but in the interest of certain special groups in the community, merchants, property owners. I mean, you have a special protections for police officers as sort of the guardians of property owners. That becomes a real problem. Even proposals for nonviolent solutions. I remember Scott Kennedy made a big deal of constantly talking about wanting mediation in the police department instead of, let's say, the inquiry, instead of complaining about the police officer, having a group look at it and say, you know, that's true, that's not true, it's sustained, unsustained, whatever it is, and then having the officer, you know, face some kind of disciplinary consequences. Let's all mediate what goes on. And that sounds okay if you're dealing with people who have equal power. But if you're dealing with one person who has a huge amount of power and lethal force behind her or him, and somebody else who's just felt that lethal force, maybe probably not lethally, hopefully, although people like Happy John Dine and the guy who initially attracted your interest back in 1990.
Yeah, Carlos Machado I saw killed by Santa Cruz police and other law enforcement.
And there have been other people killed. Not many in Santa Cruz. There haven't been that many people killed, but I actually wanted to interrupt what we're doing right now to make a quick phone call to Doug Loisel, who's the head of the Homeless Service Center, who drew to my attention the case of Tom Preston. And Tom is an alcoholic, reportedly a heroin user, who came to Doug and apparently reported to him that 3 Mondays ago he was attacked by 4 police officers in a confrontation where they used their batons on him at midday in downtown Santa Cruz. It wasn't on Pacific Avenue, it was slightly off the avenue. And I did interview Preston. He's drunk. He's a drunk guy. He's kind of pathetic. He was very upset about what happened. He kept repeating that they hit me. He had the names of the 4 officers. And he had the names of 3 witnesses, none of whom I've been able to contact successfully so far. And so I wanted Doug to call in and give his report. He's since felt, I think, come to some conclusion that while Tom may have been telling him the truth, there's no way you're going to get a drunk heroin addict to get, you know, to be your star poster child against the police. My concern is not that at all. My concern is that the officers named, who includes Officer Winston among one, if they were responsible for this, and Officer Winston denies it. I asked him about it. He said, no, I didn't do that. But he didn't go into any detail about any of it. That this not happen. And I hear so frequently detailed stories about what's been going on in terms of violence from police officers, more abuse than violence, but in some cases violence, that I want Doug Loisel, and he's agreed to talk about this a little bit on the air, but I've got to get him before 7 o'clock, and that's why I'm kind of interrupting you, John, what you're saying.
You go ahead.
Thank you.
You make your calls.
I'll do that. Don't give me trouble, or I'll call Officer Clark, or Captain Clark.
Captain. Oh, my gosh.
What a man. Well, we're giving him a ring now, and hopefully we're going to get through. Wouldn't that be cool? But he may have already hit the road. Come on, Doug. Pick it up. Pick it up. Doug, are you there? Hello, Doug. Let me see if I can get you on the air here. Hang on.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You're on the air with me and John Malkin. I don't know if you're a Free Radio Santa Cruz listener. He does the Wednesday night show called...
The Great Leap Forward.
The Great Leap Forward. And this could be your opportunity, Doug, to get a special show on Free Radio if you play your cards right.
Hi, John.
Hi.
And Doug, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Doug is also... I mean, John is also... was formerly on the Citizens Police Review Board, on the commission to create the Citizens Police Review Board when it was around. And we haven't yet, I've just mentioned the case of Tom Preston that you brought to my attention, oh gosh, 2 or 3 weeks ago now. And I mentioned that Tom is a drunk and a probable heroin addict. And yeah, he's got a lot of problems. But you had some experiences with him that concerned you, and so you contacted me. Can you run that by us on the air as to what you saw that disturbed you about what Tom said or how he looked?
Well, he just had approached me on the campus here at Homeless Services Center, and he was beaten up pretty badly. He had, his head had been, split open. He had bruising on his midsection and his ribs, and also he said that he had bruising on his legs as well, but I did not see the bruising on his legs. And so, he was very upset, and he felt like he had been, assaulted by some police officers. And so I just suggested that he talk to you, because we will advocate for our clients, but we're not an advocacy agency. And so, I thought it'd be good if he talked to you, because I know that you have, a lot of concerns about police behavior.
And indeed, I did talk to him after you suggested that. I actually found him downtown. He was sort of combination of a whipped kind of person and angry at the same time. I've talked to him before on the streets when he was intoxicated and panhandling, and there is a sort of there was a pathetic quality about him in many respects, but he didn't have the kind of anger and a sense sort of injured vulnerability that I saw that day. And I interviewed him at length and played that interview for those who want to hear it. It's on the show Thursday before last show. If you go to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org, and click on the name of this show, which is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, you can draw up that interview. And he was pretty specific. He claimed he was beaten by four police officers whom he named. He claimed he had three witnesses. He claimed that he was injured badly. He may have said something to the effect that you mentioned to me, Doug, that he resisted because he didn't like what was going on, and originally it stemmed, apparently, according to his report, from an open container that they wanted to, challenge him for, or criticize him for, or cite him for. But you said that recently you've talked to some staff out at the Homeless Service Center. You've come to the conclusion that even if Tom's story is correct, his credibility in terms of his status as a person with a number of disabilities like alcohol abuse and drug addiction is going to make it an academic issue, or?
Well, I think it's more my concern really in his case, after speaking with some of the staff that know him fairly well, is his ability to convey his story. Whatever his story is, I think his ability to convey his story might be compromised because of his suffering from alcoholism or addiction. I'm not sure if he suffers from mental health issues, but also just from my understanding, again, what staff has conveyed to me is that just his consciousness is so compromised that he, it's hard to say if he provoked, if he didn't provoke. And I'm not speculating. I don't want to speculate or anything. The staff had really, conveyed that, his consciousness level is so compromised that anything could have happened.
Do you think that, is it possible that he was beaten up by, some people in a personal dispute with him, and then he goes, is he likely to be falsely blaming police officers? Of course, you've only had two long conversations with him, correct?
Yeah, I don't think that he would. I can't imagine what your motive would be to concoct a story like that. I mean, unless you're going to try to sue the police department or something along those lines, which I don't really believe he has the ability, at least while he's using, to do that.
Yeah, I think, several things concern me. One is the fact that he hasn't been seen by anybody since I interviewed him, and he was almost immediately picked up by one of the officers whom he accused, Officer Winston. And again, as I mentioned on the air earlier, and as I mentioned to you, I confronted Officer Winston briefly and asked him, you've been accused of, using excessive force by this individual. Did you do that? And he said, no, he didn't do that. And he said he hasn't seen him since he released him. Now, when I contacted the jail, there was no indication he'd ever been there, but they don't really tell you if the people have been there or not. And he hasn't been seen by any of his friends around town. You say he hasn't been seen at the homeless service center for 2 weeks. And yet you said he may have sort of disappeared into some sort of alcoholic hibernation or something.
Right. That seems to be his pattern.
According to your the one individual you talked to at the homeless service center.
And also just my observations, because I would recognize him when he was on the campus and talk to him periodically. And he would come every couple of weeks, and then he'd be gone for a couple of weeks.
Right, but it's been a couple of weeks now. And he was significantly injured when you saw him. And I saw him at night, so I wasn't clear on a lot of his injuries, although his face did seem to be cut in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
Another concern I had has to do with a homeless service center director, you're the director, board of directors member, Don Lane. I think he's still on the board, or is he? I don't know.
No, Don's not on the board.
No, but he was. And he always closely associates himself with these homeless causes, probably, for good reason. He'd like to be helpful and all that. I contacted him several weeks ago, and I asked him to contact the police department and ask what happened around noon three Mondays ago, because that's when we were told this incident happened at Cedar and Laurel, I guess. And it's not difficult for a council member to get some straight information from a police officer if he or she wants to do that. I got a call back a week later from Lane saying, well, I talked to a lieutenant, and he can't tell me anything because there has to be a full investigation, and there won't be an investigation unless the individual who was allegedly beaten up files a complaint, which, of course, is both false. Anybody can file a complaint, even nowadays. You don't have to be the victim. And also shows a rather considerable either lack of interest, lack of awareness. And I'm surprised that Don Lane would do this, given his 20 years experience in public office and the fact that I'm talking with John Malkin here on the air, who actually just read a letter from Councilmember Don Lane criticizing a form of kind of, I don't know, an officer was denouncing the need for police review at the at the city council back in 1992, and Lane wrote him a stiff letter about that. Of course, Lane didn't do anything to establish police review for two more years, so we have the usual, talks a lot and doesn't do much. I guess I would put out a call to people on the air. If anybody's interested in some kind of investigation of police abuse, we need people who want to do things like contact the police department for public records, because the 911 calls are logged, not just the police department, but at a special emergency agency, and you are allowed to get that information. And it's also possible to start tracking down the ambulance people who witnessed
these beatings and who, according to Tom Preston, actually even sort of moved to intervene or expressed, you know, concern about it or, you know, were upset about it. He was originally charged, apparently, with assault on an officer, and then all charges were dropped. So it's an interest. I mean, it's an interesting. Again, this is by his account. So I think, you know, you said to me, watch out for this case because, you know, a lot of things could be, you know, not as they appear. As you suggested that to me, Doug.
What's that?
You suggested that to me, you know, and I think that's quite true. But I think there's been, as I mentioned to you earlier, a number of instances of alleged violence by police officers that I've heard about in the last 2 or 3 weeks, which really concerns me here in Santa Cruz. I mean, it's not as racy as sexual misconduct that provoked the scandal 20 years ago. I don't know if you're not probably not familiar with our history. We've been talking about that, but it's still, I mean, it's even more, I think, threatening to those of us who are outside on the street. I'm not one of them. I'm just, you know, happen to be lucky enough to be inside. You are, just to kind of change the subject for a moment, you have recently removed the 50-cent meal cost out at the Homeless Service Center. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So you can go out there and eat without paying 50 cents.
We'd love you to come over and have a meal with us.
Oh, you're so sweet. Now, you also have an event coming up about the homeless Get Acquainted Day or Hug the Homeless Day. What is it called?
It's the first annual homeless picnic at Harvey West Park, and it's on the 16th of October from 11 to 2 o'clock, and you can come and going to provide games, and Santa Cruz Bible Church is going to be making everybody lunch, and we think it's going to be a good time.
Will we also be harangued with weird, you know, theological sermons, or is this going to be relatively doctrine-free?
I believe it's going to be completely doctrine-free.
Oh, that's nice. And also, will Ranger Wallace be running around giving everybody tickets for lying on the grass? Hopefully not.
Well, we've reserved a picnic area, so we'll be there legally, and we'll have a rented space.
As distinguished from...
If any tickets are distributed, we'll ask for our money back.
Well, there you are.
So we just, you know, really want, we want to, you know, engage our clients in more than just feeding food, giving them a shower, a toilet, and a meal. I mean, we want to engage the clients on a, you know, on a social level as well. And, you know, there is a dehumanization that goes along with being homeless. And we, the sheltered, we dehumanize. We forget that the homeless persons have the same dreams and hopes and aspirations and desires that we do. You know, that they want a good life. You know, it's just somewhere to get off track. And so hopefully this will be a humanizing event.
Of course, there will be no shelter for those people that night or the night before, since all shelters are full, correct?
That would be correct.
And there will be a sleeping ban law in place, which allows $97 fines for each act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night.
That is correct. But if you get a sleeping fine or a camping fine, and if the Homeless Services Center will give you a letter stating that we're full and that there's no shelter available, so hopefully that will mitigate your $97 fine.
And you were telling me that you give about two of these letters a week, and you suggested that for more exact figures go to a particular person who I haven't done yet, but thank you for that, you know, that link. But have you heard back of the courts? Because in some cases I've heard the courts decline such letters, and in other cases I've heard that this is prior to your time there, but the staff would only give out one letter to a person saying, now you shouldn't sleep again, because if you do, we're not going to give you another letter. This is what I heard a couple years ago. Have you made it clear to the staff that they are supposed to give out letters on request for anybody who wants one?
No, but I'm sitting at my desk right now, so I'm going to write myself a note.
Oh, good, good. And I would also like $100 as a consultant fee.
Hey, Doug, can I ask you a question?
Oh, certainly.
It's been a while since I heard, how many beds are there for homeless people at the shelter, and how many people need beds a night in Santa Cruz?
Well, we have 46 emergency beds in the Paul Lee Loft. There's 32 for men and 16 for women. And then we have 40 beds in the Page Smith community housing, and those are for adults. And then we have 28 units in the Reveille Family Shelter for families. And so usually we have anywhere between, 100 plus to 150 persons on the campus sleeping. As far as the number of people who aren't sheltered in Santa Cruz, it's really difficult to say. A significant number of people are unsheltered. Robert might know better the answer to that than me.
Well, it should also be understood that you're not, when I say there's zero shelter tonight for people, what that means is that unlike, let's say, 5 years ago or even 2 years ago when there was a so-called interfaith satellite shelter program, although even then it was almost always full, you could theoretically come and stand in line and, if you were lucky, get a place. Tonight, there's no chance of that at all, correct?
That's correct.
Zero chance. So there is zero shelter tonight for anybody new walking in. Mm-hmm. I've estimated, and my estimates are, just as wild and uncertain as yours might be, Doug, based upon some censuses, homeless censuses, and social service estimates, is 1,500 to 2,000 people in the city, and, many times more in the county. We have someone calling in. We might be able to get on the line with us. Should we try and do that? Are you game for a little more talking there, Doug? How are you doing?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right. Let's see if we got. Hi there, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. And can you, Doug? Are you still there?
Yes.
And caller, can you hear Doug?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Robert. I haven't been able to listen to the show.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just called in because I've been living in my place for 20 years and I lost part of my rent money in August, and I offered to, make it up to my landlord on the 1st of September, and he wouldn't take the money, and he hired a lawyer, and the sheriff came and booted me out today and told me to get my walker and my toothbrush and a change of clothes and get the fuck out. So I'm homeless now. I'm on the street, and I don't have enough blankets. So if anybody out there maybe has an extra blanket or so, that can help me out, I'd appreciate it.
I should know who you are, but what's your name?
Andrea.
Hey, Andrea. How you doing? Should I ask?
I'm in a pretty bad position.
Doug, here's... you're going to be seeing more and more of this kind of situation as the economy gets worse. What can Andrea do tonight?
I can check and see if we have a bed in the loft. That's one thing we can do. So I'll make that phone call in just a second. And I have some blankets in my office. If I can just find out where she's at, I'll drop them off on the way home.
I'm going to be sleeping in my car tonight. My car hasn't been running, but it's parked across the street from my apartments. I live down by the boardwalk on Librant Street, across the street from the Peter Pan Motel, like behind the Peter Pan at the corner of Wave Lane Alley and Librant right there. And my car's across the street. It's going to be cold out.
That's Librant.
How do you spell that?
Excuse me?
Labyrinth?
Librant, yeah, Librant Street and Wave Lane Alley at the corner.
I think it's L-I-E or L-E-I-B-R-A-N-D.
L-E-I-B-R-A-N-D-T.
A Librant, it's kind of it's a German name.
Like where Kinko's and Wheelworks is, if you come through the extension by the San Lorenzo River, you come to the stop sign, and then you just go straight, and you come straight down the street, and I'm like right at the bottom of the hill right there.
Maybe Robert, you can give me the address.
Andrea, do you want to give me your phone number? I'll take you off air if you want. You can give me the phone number and I'll pass.
I'm at the payphone down the street. I'm right up the street from the merry-go-round at that little beach laundry liquor store market at the payphone. I don't have a phone.
I know where Kinko's is. You can just meet me at Kinko's.
What time?
I don't know. How long are we going to talk, Robert?
Another 5 or 10 minutes, maybe.
Okay. Can you take me off the air and I'll check the loft and see if we have anything available?
Sure. Why don't you check that and I'll keep talking with Andrea here about what's happening.
I'll just call. I'll just take my headphones off.
Okay. Yeah. Just
give me a second.
Sure. And Andrea, Were you given any warning before the foreclosure, before the eviction happened, or?
Well, yeah, I'd gotten some papers, and I went down to the courthouse on September 8th and filed for this extension, and I have some neurological disabilities too, so I have a hard time, you know, and I've been confused, and I didn't connect the dots, but, you know, I didn't do it on purpose, and, I just didn't understand, and I asked a friend of mine to look through all these important letters and papers to see if there was anything I needed to do, and she said it was okay, and I was telling her the other night, I said, sheriffs are going to come and throw me out. She's all, no, they're not, Andrea, they can't do that to you because you're disabled. And yeah, they can, because he came, he goes, actually, I was supposed to come and knock on your door at 6:30, but he was nice enough to wait until 9:30 or so, and then came in.
So you're sitting on the side in your car with all your stuff all around you at the moment? That's
well,
the deal?
No, my stuff's in the apartment. He says he's got to store it for 2 weeks. And, I just have a few little belongings in my car, and, I'm just kind of hanging out in my car across the street from my house.
What kind of a car do you have?
A little black Saturn.
Okay.
1999 Saturn.
Wow. Okay. Better car than mine there, Andrea. So, it looks like John has taken off. John Malkin, who is my co-host here, and I guess we will be having... Doug should be coming back shortly. He's checking to see.
Yeah, I'm actually, they didn't pick up the phone, so I'm walking over.
Okay.
For a while.
Yeah, this is, Doug, I want to first of all, thank you, Doug, for what you're doing. I mean.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're accessible to the public. You're accessible to clients. You're accessible. You're not getting paid for this particular part of your job. This is, you're supposed to be quitting around 5, right?
Yeah, so that would be nice.
Yeah, I hear you. So,
hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, we have on the line. We have Andrea, who's lost her housing, and we have Doug, who's the head of the homeless service center, trying to find her A, blankets, and B, possibly one night.
Something to eat. If you have something to eat, I haven't eaten in a couple days. I actually haven't lost my housing. I got a transfer packet from the housing authority. Thank God. It's going to take me a little time to find another place. So I still have my housing. I'm sort of homeless at the moment, though.
I see.
Don't have
so it's a temporary
a warm
thing
house
for you.
To go into.
I got you. And you're disabled, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the sheriff told me, and I told him, I said, I can't even hardly move my body, let alone move my stuff. He goes, well, then I suggest you get a move on right now. He said, I don't care how you do it. He said, you need to start taking the steps right now. He goes, you need me to get your walker for you. And he went and he grabbed my walker.
Let me ask you a quick question. If you had assistance, can you negotiate stairs?
Excuse me?
If we were able to give you some assistance, would you be able to walk upstairs?
Not very well.
But I mean, if it meant, we have a place for you. And we give you some assistance.
Yeah, probably, as long as they're not too long, like those metal stairs over there on the extension. Boy, those suckers, that's a climb.
Okay, well, we have a place for you here. I think Robert's going to be on the air for a while, so what's that?
Oh, I just said, uh-huh.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to... I'll swing by and pick you up and bring you up here. Your car doesn't work, does it?
No, I've had this electrical problem for a little while now. It broke down for a few months.
Again, give Doug the address and you're a 99 black Saturn car.
It's a little black Saturn, and it's parked behind the Peter Pan Motel, which is like on Riverside Avenue. When you come over the bridge, it's that yellow motel with the orange trim.
Okay, I'll figure it out. The Peter Pan Hotel. I'll just look it up.
Yeah, and I live at 317, well, I don't live there anymore as of today, 317 Librant Avenue. I'm across the street from there, and that's where my car is.
Okay, but give me about maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, take your time. There's no hurry. If it takes longer than 15 minutes, that's fine, No
Well,
hurry.
I'm in a little hurry. I want to go home.
Oh, okay, well, whatever. Yeah, I just don't want to feel like you're having to rush because of me or anything like that.
No, I got to get off the air before Robert starts asking me the tough questions.
Yeah, this is an excuse, isn't it? You're being paid, Andrea, to do this, aren't you?
Yeah.
Hey, listen. Well, listen. Good luck to you, Andrea. Doug, thank you for calling in, and I'll lambaste you later.
Yeah, all right.
I know
maybe
you will.
Maybe I'll see. I'll try to hear your show on Sunday. I want to get down to the city council, the oral communication, hopefully on Tuesday, and talk about this.
There will be a city council meeting on Tuesday. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thank you both very much.
Yeah. Thank
you. All right,
Robert.
All right. Okay. I'll see you in a few minutes.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye. And that's a connection. And, you know, you can call in if you've got some thoughts on what you've just heard or if you have problems of your own to talk about, 427-3772, problems with our opinions about the police department, the need for accountability, violence on the streets against the homeless, crazy enforcement of laws that shouldn't be there in the first place, but that once they're there, they're only enforced against a particular class of people or at the discretion of the police officer. Here's an article by Sherry Connable way back in 2002 from the Green Press. And I played, for those of you who are regular listeners, part of the last board meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board, at which Sherry Connable introduced a resolution, I think she was introduced at a prior meeting, but it was discussed and passed by the Citizens Police Review Board to be sent to the City Council for either to be voted up or down. Emily Riley refused. She was then mayor of the city and the head of the City Council, refused to put it on the City Council agenda, and it died just without any kind of discussion, particularly since the Police Review Board itself was voted away. And as I said, I think because of these kinds of actions, which actually indicated for the first time in its existence, the board was actually going to start to do something real. Not quite the first time. They'd done a few other things, but very little. This is what Sherry Connable wrote. On Monday, December 9th, 2002, at 5:30 p.m., the Citizens Police Review Board of the City of Santa Cruz will consider a resolution opposing selective enforcement of the law and reaffirming the city's commitment to non-discrimination in any form against any class of people. The meeting takes place at City Hall and City Council Chambers at 809 Center Street, and that's still where they meet for those of you who want to go down to City Council on Tuesday. You too can come and raise your voice. Selective enforcement of the law is a practice in which certain groups of people are targeted for violating laws, while other people are left alone for violating the very same laws. It is also called profiling, which is illegal under state statutes. It is typically used against oppressed or disenfranchised groups of people like people of color, youth, gays and lesbians, the homeless, the visibly poor, the mentally challenged, and folks who choose non-mainstream lifestyles, not to mention political activists, of course. On October 14, 2002, the Citizens Police Review Board held a special hearing to listen to citizen concerns about selective enforcement and police harassment. And the reason this is significant is because 3 months before we had the massive expansion of the downtown ordinances done as a political move by council members Riley and Porter, two council members who are no longer on the council, but supported when they got into office in November by council members Rotkin and Matthews, who are now respectively vice mayor and mayor, and Rotkin will soon be mayor of Santa Cruz. Even though, as I've said many times, when there was a real open public hearing and people who were in the public were asked to state what they thought the main problems were downtown, it wasn't bad panhandling, it wasn't nasty street performers, it wasn't people blocking the sidewalk, it wasn't rudeness or even drunks hanging out, it wasn't the possibility of being stabbed in the restroom by a heroin addict. It was police harassment and selective enforcement. You could find that in the headlines. I think it's of the July 31st or August 1st, 2002, Santa Cruz Sentinel. And so the Police Review Board held a hearing in October, 3 months later, to hear more about this issue and to decide whether it should take a position. This Sherry Connable is writing about that. The resolution below was presented on behalf of People for a Free and Equal Downtown, PFED, a group that coalesced around the struggle over the passage of the revised downtown ordinances in the city of Santa Cruz last summer. These ordinances create a structure that allows and, in fact, encourages selective enforcement of the law, and they are frequently used in that manner.
While folks living outside are typically the victims of these ordinances, the targeting of people of color and youth has also been a concern in the city and county of Santa Cruz for a long time. This resolution begins to address and stop that practice. The resolution is new in a very important way. It begins to bring into the body of non-discrimination language categories and phrases that would protect groups that have previously gone unprotected, the homeless, the visibly poor, the mentally challenged, and folks of non-mainstream lifestyles. This is a step we have needed to take for many years. Listen to the language that people used to talk about the homeless and visibly poor, and you will hear almost the same words, phrases, and justifications that were used against black folks and that sparked the civil rights movement in the 1960s. Selective enforcement of the law can have highly destructive consequences. The lives of the folks being acted against get very fractured and compromised, facing fines they cannot pay, long hours of community service, jail time, and constant pressure from law enforcement personnel. They need and deserve relief and protection. Decisions to enforce the law are very often based not on behavior, but on appearance. As a female in this culture, I know how very destructive and insidious this can be. This practice has been so obvious in downtown Santa Cruz. Sometimes it reflects the beliefs and prejudices of individual officers, but it is often also a result of an expectation being passed along from further up the chain of command in the police hierarchy. This is wrong and should not be tolerated by any government agency that believes in civil liberties and constitutional rights. The CPRB is considering this resolution for adoption, which it actually voted in favor of, with a recommendation that it be sent to the City Council for discussion and adoption as well. Please join us that evening or express your opinion by emailing to markhalfmoon@yahoo.com. He was the chair of the Police Review Board, the last Police Review Board. Here's the draft resolution itself. Presented to the Santa Cruz Citizens Police Review Board October 14, 2002, and voted finally, I think, on December 9, 2002. Whereas the City of Santa Cruz is a community that welcomes and celebrates diversity, and whereas the City of Santa Cruz is a community committed to treating all people with dignity and respect, and whereas the City of Santa Cruz is a community that believes deeply in the principles of fair and equal justice under the law, I'm beginning to laugh here, but and of liberty and justice for all, and whereas the City of Santa Cruz is a community that will not tolerate discrimination in any form against any class of people, and whereas selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, that targets certain groups of people is a form of discrimination that has enormously destructive and unfair consequences, and whereas selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, in fact denies the sacred principles of liberty and justice for all and of fair and equal treatment under the law, now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Santa Cruz reaffirms its commitment to non-discrimination in any form against any group of people based on race, color, national origin, religion, creed, sexual orientation, age, economic status, disability, appearance, lifestyle choices, or any other class-based category, and that therefore the City of Santa Cruz resolves that selective enforcement of the law, whether local, state, or federal, against any such group or group of people will not be tolerated, nor will any city funds be spent to support such enforcement. And furthermore, that the City of Santa Cruz resolves to fully honor in all ways possible the inviolable principle of non-discrimination with fair and equal treatment under the law and liberty and justice for all. Submitted by Sherry Connable on behalf of People for a Free and Equal Downtown, October 14th, 2002. It's a pretty general statement, you know, sort of a flowery one, doesn't have any enforcement mechanisms. You would think it would be something the City Council would have no trouble passing, but it didn't even want to look at it. In fact, killed the board that passed it, and we have an ongoing justification and essential practice of selective enforcement. We've actually had people like Mike Rotkin defend the practice at City Council. I'm going to take a musical break, and I remind you that you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. You can give a call in at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And, well, looks like I got a call, and you have to wait on that musical break because we want to know who's calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Who's this?
Yes, Robert. This is Rich Linnemeyer. I was in the mall the other day.
Uh-huh.
I've been listening to your program, and it's a small world. I know John very well. Our first guest, Ben Malcolm.
Right.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I just want to know, you've seen me in the mall, and you've seen John. Who's better looking?
You know, I've got to tell you that I'm not quite remembering who you are.
Yeah, I had the camper with all the monkeys and gorillas and all that stuff.
Oh, you're running for political office.
That's correct.
That's good. And the name of your party is the...
The Revival Party.
You want to see a revival of justice and fair play, perhaps?
Well, we're talking on a national level.
I'm more concerned
party.
With the... We're talking here, of course, in this show on a local level.
I understand that.
It's easy for people, politicians, to babble about the national scene, but then support local police repression. Now, we hope you're not one of those.
Well, I happen to be a person that I was just listening to you a minute ago. And I've been discriminated against.
Tell me about that.
Oh, okay. Non-mainstream lifestyle, my art cars, okay? And I've also had, you know, beyond the police, courtroom police favoritism. I'm presently dealing with Judge Robert Attic, who is the lead judge over there.
Artichoke Heart Attic is what
pardon
we call
me?
Him. We call him Artichoke Heart Attic.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Not really, because once I had a ruling in... favor of me against the Justice Department, just me and my dog against the Deputy Attorney General, and so I always liked him, and I thought he was a fair judge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever. Well, my story basically is a lot longer. We don't have time to go into it.
No, go ahead. Take your time. Let's hear your story. Go ahead.
Pardon me? This political party has quite a history to it. It's not like I'm competing. I put on your message machine with the Pink Lady Umbrella Man and Morgana the Great or whatever. There's a lot of purpose behind what I'm doing. There's been an actual political start to it, and Carbonera Estates with 30 people in attendance. That was 2 years ago on April 1st. I thought that would be a fitting day.
Mm-hmm.
Seascape Resort donated furniture. There's a whole lot more to it than just you walking up to me in the mall.
For sure, but what is the platform of your party? Do you have a platform? Do you have some specific changes you want to see?
Yeah, well, basically, the first thing has to do with attitude of the citizens, a website, hopefully in the future, to try to get people on board as far as learning how to be happy and joyful. 7 out of 10 Americans, as I mentioned to you when you came up to me, are angry or depressed.
What do you mean, angry or depressed?
Well, that means they're unhappy.
They're just malcontents. They don't understand that Obama will give us the audacity of hope.
Well, he's got a plate full, and I don't agree with all that he does, but he's a very intelligent person. He's certainly an eloquent speaker. And,
yeah, he's really particularly smart about Afghanistan and Iraq. I see he's really got a shrewd strategy there.
That's a tough situation.
Well, what they said about Vietnam. How do we get out of Vietnam? Well, you can walk out, or you can swim out,
right.
Or you can drive
right.
out.
Right.
You know, it's not really rocket science getting out of those places if you want to leave. If you don't, then it's a little harder, isn't it?
Right. Well, we're not on the air, are we?
Yes.
Oh, we are.
We are on the air.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. Be advised, listeners, that when you call in, we got no screening process.
You go directly
on the air, unless you say you don't want to be on the air, in which case...
Oh, no, that's all right. I called because I was listening to your program, and it said we're going to commercial, so I thought I'd catch you on a commercial.
I'm going to music, actually, yeah. But I always prefer, you know, people who want to call in live. If you want to talk to me off air, we can do that, too, but I suggest anybody, yourself included, you could give me a call instead on the Huff line at 423-HUFF.
Yeah, I did that earlier, and
I'll try and get back to you.
Number, and perhaps one day, if you're interested in the story, maybe we could just get together sometime and talk about it a little bit more.
Sure. I mean, if you, by the way, have you suffered any discrimination in this town recently?
Uh-huh. Well, that's kind of incidental to what I'm trying to do, but it is a matter of fact. There's no question that I have been cited.
What has happened recently? Tell me about that.
Well, for instance, up at State Park. Now,
That's not city, but it is nearby.
Well, there is one police officer that just arrested me right out in front of the municipal court. I was going there to deliver a letter to Judge Attic, and it was for loud music. Well, the fact of the matter is, I get thumbs up and everything else from a lot of policemen, and smiles, and, you know, some just don't even say anything, you know.
What were you arrested for?
Loud music. But the particular police officer that did this, kind of had it in for me. And the reason is because annually I put my art cars, so to speak, in the Aptos parade. And one year I didn't want to follow a band because of the noise, because I had my own music and I thought I'd be drowned out. So I talked to the parade director and he said, well, just pull off the side of the road because the parade stops. Whenever you feel like you want to pull in, just do it. Well, the same officer that just arrested me, he'd come over to me and said, get in the parade. I said, well, I've been told. He said, I'm telling you, get in the parade. And I didn't obey him. So I think there's been a little grudge there for a long time.
What's the name of the officer?
I'm not going to say over the air.
I always think it's important to do that because I think we've got to hold officers accountable for what they do.
Well.
But you don't have to do
that. You know,
anything.
I don't actually have, I don't know if in my head right now, I know it.
Right. No, that's okay. No, that's the reason I asked that question, because I think, you know, if an officer engages in a certain kind of activity which she or he regards as justifiable, then they shouldn't be ashamed or afraid to stand up for it, and they're being criticized
that.
For it. Well,
yeah.
That's how it goes.
Basically, I as part of my campaign route, I go right through the court every day, try to cheer people up. You know, now I think, you know, there is sometimes the word on the street about people. And I think the word got out that I do more good than harm, you know, with what I do. I mean, I've had one girl chase me down one day. In fact, I'm looking at her picture right now. And said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I said, for what? And she said that one day she saw me at 41st Street and Capitola Road. She saw my particular art car. She started to smile. She started to laugh. She said she was on her way to commit suicide.
Oh, well, good for you.
And I thought, you know, they say if you've done one... Whatever. Anyway,
no, that's a good
had,
thing to
you
do.
Know, my first laugh since my husband died, first laugh since my mother died, and these kind of things. But yeah,
right.
I do have my objectors, and some people flip the bird at me once in a while, who perhaps unhappy campers. So anyway, I do what I do.
Okay. Well, I encourage people to, check you out downtown. You do have a famous car with stuffed animals all over it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's... to be seen, because I look at it as the least expensive political campaign in the history of the United States of America.
Well, again, I ask you, what is your platform? I've asked you that a couple times. You have to tell me what specifically, what laws do you want to see changed, if anything? You know, what policies that are currently enforced do you want to see altered?
Well, first of all, I think the spirit has got to be changed. I think that we as Americans, all right, we have to learn how to be happy. I think we've become so greedy. Part of that card depicts the fact that we should be more childlike rather than childish. Childish simply means selfish. And I believe that, you know, our form of government lends to 7 cars in a garage and 18 bedrooms and one person living in a house imbalanced, very imbalanced. And I believe that, you know, basically the roots in a loincloth are the basic needs in life. And beyond that, you know, we don't need all of these frivolous things that we have. You know, the capitalist society is run amok. It needs some balance. I believe another problem we have is that the whole system is run by lawyers. And I believe that lawyers are imbalanced because as human beings, we're body, mind, and spirit. And because of that, I think they're eggheads, I mean, intellectuals, and I think they are not necessarily the most compassionate, loving, and kind people on earth, and I think we need a better mix of that, of humanity, total humanity, body, mind, and spirit. And so,
well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to call this optimism break to a close here,
okay.
Caller, because, you know, I mean, it's hard to disagree with you, but of course, the purpose of my show is to give people who are afraid, not just a good laugh every now and then from an art car and from a sympathetic soul like yourself, but some form ultimately of redress for continuing abuses that are happening, regularly happening and planned and probably likely to continue happening downtown. And that's something I'm sure you're familiar with too.
Well, I'm trying to change the attitude of people.
That's
and
good.
I am an
that's not bad.
Because the opposite of optimist is pessimist, and I would never want to be one of those.
Okay,
and
well.
Can person, not a can't person, and I believe that anything is possible with God.
Well, keep me advised as to how, you know, whether you run into any problems or perhaps get any, you know, donuts and coffee from the police. Whatever happens next happens. And again, we've been talking with, what's your name again?
Richard Lennemeyer.
Thank you, Richard, and I'll give you the last.
Is John on with you very often? Or
John is John is rarely on my show, but he does have his own Wednesday night show,
uh-huh.
The Great Leap Forward. I think that's at 7:30.
Hello, sure. But I missed him. Anyway, okay, great.
Hey, thanks for calling in, man.
Thank you very much.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772.
I met a stranger. Oh, she told me about people. She pointed her finger. She said to me, there's people. Oh, there's people hungry over there.
And we have a quick update, or should we say hello, from drummer Dave. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
Well, you know, pretty much same as usual. What's the story yesterday at the drum circle? What was happening there?
Oh, it was great. There was no uniform presence. You know, it was wonderful. You still there?
Oh, I am indeed. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can hardly hear you.
Oh.
So anyway, yeah, there was no uniform presence, and it all went real well. No fighting. No, just drumming. Just really eloquent drumming. A lot of good music.
Oh, that's good.
Extended into the mall. It was great.
Haven't seen Tom Preston around, have you?
No, I don't know that man.
Yeah, very few do.
No, yeah, very few do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, yeah, it was really great. Good weather's starting to chill off a little bit. It's going to be cold tonight. I'm sorry for all those homeless people, especially the woman on LeBrant Street. Hope she gets it together, and thanks for that guy that's going down there to beat feet to get her blankets. Thank you. And, hey, great town Santa Cruz is somewhat. I'm glad this radio's on the air.
Well, thank you. Thank you, John.
Hey,
David.
You take it easy, Rob. Yeah, peace, man, Santa Cruz.
Ditto. And phone lines are still open, 427-3772. Let's turn to some street interviews while we still have a little time left. Again, I'm going to have to beg the indulgence of the community for a tape recorder that at the time was less than entirely healthy. But let's see if we can get something out of it anyway. Assuming we can get past
October 1st, in front of the Del Mar Theater. And Jay is doing the play here. Harmonica and guitar, open guitar case. Illegally set up within 10 feet of a directory sign. I commend you, Jay.
I'm doing my best to keep it legal, bro.
All right. I'll have to reward you for your insisting on this.
Oh, yeah.
Have made this spot specifically illegal by putting in both a recycling bin and a directory sign, requiring anybody with an open display device to be within 10 feet of each.
That's actually to be 10 feet away from each, which means that it's no longer legal for a performer to be in front of the Del Mar Theater. And most places along that block are illegal, though there are some legal spots still, which people, I guess, can fight over and police officers can lie about, claiming that there are no legal spots. Or they can ignore people who are in illegal spots, as they frequently do, except when they decide they want to crack down on them. Which that's what we call selective enforcement.
How's the business in Nigeria? I'm like two songs out so far. No hassles. Cop walked right by me and said, how are you doing? I said, I'm okay.
Wow. Keep up the good work. Yeah. See how long this lasts.
Well, if I was sitting down, maybe it would have been different.
Indeed. Yeah,
Now, Winston was here driving away people last night, but not established and ancient performers like yourself.
Right, right. We're just kind of blended in a mix out here.
You know? You're a Santa Cruz tradition.
Yeah, we're traditional.
You are.
We love it here. I mean, you know, this is what we love to do. I do. That's where I live down.
I haven't seen you much on the streets. Have you been out much?
I don't come out as much as I should, for all I know.
Is that because you're writing the great American novel? What is going
on? Yeah, I wish. Yeah, just inspiration-wise, and I got to make sure my strength is up to come out here and deal with the shenanigans that are involved. And being positive is a full-time job.
Are you perhaps referring to the set of ordinances and police practices that may make it more difficult to be here?
Well, just the bumblebees coming up to you and saying, blah, blah, blah. I mean, move
You're
over.
Referring to the hosts, to the hospitality
feet, and it's all small stuff. I mean, good God, are you serious? Can we find something better to do here?
Has that happened to you with the new Yellow Jackets?
Yes, it happened to me with my band. One of my friends was too close to the curb, and she came and said, just move over a little bit.
I don't think there's a law about being close to the curb.
Not. Maybe she was worried about her public safety. I'm not sure.
I see. Creating a new law just to help you out.
I suppose. I don't know.
Help you way out, actually.
Yeah, it was way out. The way out. Remember those guys, the way outs?
No, but...
Fred Flintstone, and they had this band called the way outs.
Oh, really?
It was crazy.
I was never a Flintstones fan,
yeah.
So...
It was way, probably way before Goldabar died.
Well, not many people on the streets now. Continue and play on, is all I can say.
That's about it. I mean, I don't know what else to do.
The taxi driver perhaps will appreciate the music.
Yeah.
Two taxis. Okay, we're down here listening to a chorus of somewhat alcoholic singers. Well, Lawrence, while you're making your tea, we tried to talk to you earlier. We had a defective tape recorder, for which my apologies. You, on the other hand, have had some pretty defective police officers, or maybe too effective police officers coming after you. What's been happening?
There was a highway patrol pulled me over last night, yelling at me and telling me to get off my bike or I will be fired on. And I asked them for what reason, what did I do wrong? They said I was selling methamphetamines to younger kids and never done it in my life, never will do it. And I'm getting really fed up with these cops. They don't put bodyguards on these idiots or bodyguards on us. I don't know what else to do because Eastsiders are still beating the crap out of these kids out here, too.
I want to hear about that as well, but where did this incident with the California Highway Patrol happen?
It was on Mission near, right going out of town on Mission.
And what time of night was it?
It was about 11:30, 12 o'clock.
And you have an unusual bike. It's a sort of a lie-down bike. You kind of lean back.
Yeah, it's a recumbent
bike.
Yeah.
Now, what the police officers and the highway patrol car drove up behind you or in front of you?
They physically pulled me over, blocked me in, not knowing what to do, and I don't know what to do anymore.
And what was your response to this that way when they
shot me in the side with a salt gun.
Salt gun. And did they warn you before shooting you, or did they just shoot you?
I told them I'm coming off the bike and I'm going to pull my ID out and saying who I am.
Right.
30 seconds later, I got shot in the back on my hip side. And you guys got pictures of it, and I want to deal with it.
I did see a picture of it. This is your left leg and your left side. Now, it's shortly about 3 or 4 inches below your groin, below your waist.
Yes.
Now, what happened next after that?
They took me to jail, fingerprint me. Found out I was in the right person, and they released me about 2 hours later.
Did they abjectly apologize and offer you restitution up to $10,000?
No, they didn't say anything. They just said, you're free to go home. I didn't know what else to do. I just said, fine.
Your bike was released as well?
Yes.
So,
How did they determine you were the wrong person? Because I'm not black and I'm not riding a skinnier bike than that.
Perhaps you had a colorblind officer.
No, I don't have a short bike. I have a long bike.
So, what do you count for this behavior by the California Highway Patrol? How do you count for this?
Idiots and morons who don't belong with a bad road gun.
And have you been to the hospital?
Yes, but they tell me that I've come back tomorrow to get the test results.
Now, are you employed?
Yes, I am.
What kind of work do you do?
I am a Bonecrest Security Company employee.
And this is an organization you run yourself?
Yes, sir.
And
I got a new fucking police
gun. Wow. How long has the organization been happening? It looks like you're still in some pain now.
Yeah, you know, I'm in a lot of pain.
You are sleeping outside. You're homeless. Yeah.
No, I'm not homeless.
And probably people listening to this are in a lot of pain, too, considering the very sort of peculiar quality of the recording. I had really thought we had an operational tape here, but it looks like it's a problem. It's either too slow or too fast, which means, I don't know quite sure what that means. It means it was probably recorded with bad batteries again, and I thought I had good batteries. What can I say? Anyway, a couple of quick updates before I have to leave, and only got about 10 minutes left in the show. I went to the trial of Robert Blind Bear Facer. He's the distinguished-looking older guy with a white beard and plays guitar late at night in front of New Leaf he plays music in front of New Leaf Market, and he often had, in the old days, a kind of a triangular tent cart he'd pushed around until it was stolen from him. And he has been the one who's been told by police that he can't perform on Pacific Avenue because there's no legal places to perform. Straight lie, or some kind of bizarre twisted ignorance. He also got a sleeping ticket, and he got an attorney, Ed Fry, who agreed to defend his case. I went down there with him. We went down there at 1:30 to the court of Commissioner Kim Baskett. Baskett's court is the court in the basement of the county building. Most of the courts are in the courtroom building, which is the Flatiron building at 701 Ocean Street at Ocean and Water. But this court is in the big five-story building right next door. It's the basement infraction court where most tickets will show up unless you disqualify Commissioner Kim Baskett. Now, in the past, I've encouraged people to do just that because Baskett has a number of problems. Like many of the officers of the court and many of the judges, she's not a judge, but she's got a title of commissioner. She tends to be partial to the police department, and she sometimes fails to inform people of their rights. She's gotten better. I got to say that about her. And I was impressed with her performance this time. The problem with disqualifying her now is it goes into the courtroom often of a really bad judge, Ariadne Simons, who I've seen not only in my case find it that one has no right to stand and talk to people at the Metro Center if a security guard doesn't want you there, regardless of what you're doing, apparently. That seems to be her position, although she dressed it up in nice legal language, and I'm appealing that decision. In any case, in the case of Robert Facer, I was in the courtroom of Kim Baskett, which we didn't disqualify, and Attorney Ed Fry was there, all dressed up in a nice business suit. And there was somebody else there, a guy called John, who got a ticket for sitting on a planter. And Ed Fry agreed to represent him. As is my wont, I usually request the right to make an audio recording of the court proceeding, both for my own notes for later, and then hopefully for broadcast on this station. Those are two separate requests. If you want to do it for your own notes, that's one thing. If you want to do it for broadcast, you have to fill out different forms. In the past, I've often been able to get it for my own notes less frequently for broadcasting. And more recently, it's been hard to get it for either in any of these courts. They somehow feel that they want you to spend a lot of money on getting the court's transcript. But in the basement of the county building, they have to set up special recording equipment, and so
they had to continue the trial because, at my suggestion, Ed Frye asked that there be a court recording as well as him, they allow him to make his own tape recording of the proceedings and allow me to make a tape recording for journalistic purposes. Basket granted, that's our the commissioner Basket granted all these requests, and there'll be a new trial at 1:30 on November 3rd of both Robert Facer and John, whose last name I know but don't recall at the moment. So that's the update on the Facer case, another sleeping ban case coming into court. The officer who ticketed Facer, which I regard as simply harassment ticketing, since these officers know there is no legal place for people to sleep. You heard it from the Homeless Services Center director himself tonight. Although, it's interesting, you might say, well, he contradicted himself. He said he was going to try to find a place for Andrea, the woman who called in. That seems to me like a very unusual and special exception. And for the police to use that as an excuse wouldn't be, I think, appropriate or fair. In other words, what I'm saying is if the police department knows there are no legal places for people to go sleep, yet they ticket them anyway, they know that those tickets are going to fail in court under the necessity defense, and therefore their ticketing is simply a matter of harassment, which is inappropriate, to say the least. But quite customary, usual, and apparently all the rage with the Santa Cruz Police Department. Certainly not confined or restricted or punished or sanctioned or compensated for. So, in any case, the case goes back to court of both these men on November 3rd. If you have a problem with a sleeping ban ticket, do come to the Huff meeting. We meet every Wednesday at 10:30, although our meetings are probably going to become less frequent because we're getting less people showing up at the meetings, maybe the winter hours or something, and we are probably going to go into hibernation ourselves for a while soon. That could be happening. If you want to help out with any of these issues, you can give me a call. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the organization is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You can call 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and I'll find you some exciting job to do, which may involve research on the computer, may involve designing a flyer, may involve attending a court hearing, it may involve doing some writing. I also got an interesting email from Linda Lemaster, who has done some writing, and in spite of the fact that she's been ill. Thanks, Linda, for doing that for us. I'm going to probably read that on Sunday. I do a longer edition of the show, 9:30 to 1 on Sunday, and I'll be reading you her document, which is an analysis of the money going to what I call the poverty pimp organizations in this community. And it's apparently the Santa Cruz County got $4 million for 3 years to be spent supposedly on behalf of homeless people. Linda is going to analyze that, Lighthouse Linda as I call her, and maybe we'll even have her in the studio talking about it. I'll be reading her account even if she's not in the studio. So, let's see here. The Guerrilla Theater was going to do a showing tomorrow of The Third Man in San Lorenzo Park, but apparently that has been postponed, according to the latest update here. So don't go rushing over to San Lorenzo Park tomorrow at dusk. I thought that was going to be happening, but according to this Vision Song, Valerie has sent me a Santa Cruz Guerrilla Drive-In Flash that they've rescheduled The Third Man showing. That's the name of the movie, the Orson Welles movie they're going to be showing, because of a conflict. And there's numerous other benefits coming up, but hopefully other people will be talking about those benefits. I'm expecting Uncle Dennis to come rushing in at any moment or sauntering in with his ale of choice. And you can all, and of course his endless from the dregs to his creamy, dreggy music, which it has its charms, I guess. There's been some internal controversy, some ongoing struggles in this collective around what to do regarding some people's desire to cut back Spanish language programming, some people's desires to expand it, concerns about too much Spanish language music all night, which is really inappropriate. If you don't like the Spanish language music all night, call the station and complain. It shouldn't be there. There should be some Spanish language music, which is great, but there should also be some other diverse programming. Sometimes the programmers get a little careless, there's been some internal conflicts here on Free Radio, which are sometimes expressed in peculiar ways, perhaps is the most charitable way of putting it. The last thing I'm going to play before Uncle Dennis arrives is something that happened on the street. A man named Jeremy from the organization Next Space, which is a sort of a yuppie playground on the second floor of the Cooper and Pacific, where you can go rent a computer space. It was pushed by Ryan Coonerty, who's one of the people who's always in the photographs of the so-called Next Space thing, Next Space organization, when it gets profiled in the Metro. Jeremy was harassing a man named Brian Parquette on the sidewalk for sitting on the bench there, and one of the benches has already been removed from in front of Next Space. Jeremy, whom I talked to personally, he said that's not because of Next Space, but he didn't apologize for harassing Brian Parquette. We tried a little sting operation where we actually tried to do some video and audio of that. We do have a little audio. I'm going to go out on that audio. It's kind of hard to hear, but you're going to hear Jeremy denouncing Brian as a faggot drug dealer. That's what he was saying at that time. Let's see if we can actually hear this. Here we go. There's more, particularly discussion of it. I attempted to talk to Ryan Coonerty, who arrived shortly thereafter to the Next Space. He'd been sitting up the street at the Lulu Carpenters at the Octagon. He didn't want to talk to me about the issue. And you'll be able to hear more about this on Sunday. We were going to post some video, which we have of this, but having a little trouble with our techies getting the video together. I will be back on Sunday because I have to go now because some silly musical show with a lot of questionable alcoholic intoxication is going to take over the studio. I don't wish to criticize the content of the show because, after all, we do want diversity in the studio. And here is diverse there is. Here he is.
At least it's not boring.
Well, that's certainly a matter of opinion, isn't it, folks? Anyway, thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I will, if I can deal with it, be back on Sunday and talk to you then. Cream to the dregs, coming up next.
begin to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Bad luck and trouble's my only friend. I've been down ever since I was 10. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all. Carry me to my grave. Born under a bad sign. I've been down since I began to crawl. If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all.
Yeah, a little bit of Procol Harum for you there on From the Cream to the Dreg, Uncle Dennis, sitting in here and finally wound my way into the squeaky chair. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also on the wide, weird web at freakradio.org. Donations accepted, suggestions accepted at the studio at 831-427-3700.